This is New York firefighter Raphael Porriette for Firehouse Subs. Every day, a part of every sub you buy at Firehouse Subs helps provide life-saving equipment for first responders. And now, for a limited time, they're introducing the Daily Sub Special. Every day, get a medium sub of the day for just $5.55. They kick it off with Meatball Monday and finish it off with Italian Sunday, with something delicious every day in between for just $5.55. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Tap the banner now to learn more.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos. You know, we're kind of continuing our Florida swing down here after the PGA Golf Show. We got to spend a couple days at PGA Village and play the renovated Ryder course, plus one of my favorites in all of Florida, the Dye course. We have made our way down to West Palm for a couple days and are thoroughly enjoying the warm sunshine and great weather. Got to spend a little time over by the beach today, not too far from Tiger's house. Good time. Hey, this week on the Back Nine Report, we break down Tiger's week at the Farmers Insurance Open, where Jason Day was victorious in a Monday finish. Brittany Lincecum defended her title in a weather-shortened Pure Silk Bahamas Classic, and Rory didn't quite finish the deal in Dubai. Carlos, let's go!
Let's go, and hey, today, Payne Stewart would have been 61 years old, but unfortunately,
oh, wow.
In 1999, we all know what happened, and just remembering him and Curtis Strange, happy birthday to you. That's, you know, his birthday today. Yes, you might remember 1989 U.S. Open winners. So those are the two notable golfers that were born today, January 30th. Of course, remembering Payne Stewart, one of the greats of all times. And Fred, like you said, this weekend, wow, Tiger's back. We're going to have for you a great show. And our practice range, we're going to talk about an issue, a subject that you are going to like. Because now that we've seen lately, all this resurgence with the women asking for, well, not asking, but reporting and, you know, coming with the Harvey Weinstein subject. And now the women are more and more in the news. And Stacey Lewis took her time to write an essay regarding the difference between the payments on the women's and the men. And we're going to be discussing that. We're going to have Steve Ewings to talk about it. We're going to have our VIG, Susie Whaley. You don't want to miss that one. She's always great. But, as usual, we're going to start with our Week in Backswing, where every week we recap the action on the major tours. And Fred, Jason Day, we mentioned last week, hey, you know, he's not in the top 10, but he should be looked at because he was number one at the beginning of last year. So he's not separated that much from that, and he certainly looked like he's back to form, right?
Absolutely, but I got to tell you, we got to start talking. You've been predicting that Alex Noren was going to win on the PGA Tour, and he nearly made it happen, made you a savant again. On Sunday at the Farmers Insurance Open. And as you mentioned, Jason Day appears to be returning to top form after his injury issues last year. So it looks like he's ready to join Dustin, Justin, Jordan, and Rory at the top of the golf world. Oh, yeah, we got that Tiger guy, too. Day carded a not-so-illustrious 73 in the first round, but made everything on Friday to card the low round of the week, an 8-under par 64. And that was not easy to do. Both the North and South courses now at Torrey play extremely difficult. Day followed up with a 71-70 on the weekend to finish at 10-under par, tied with Noren and Ryan Palmer. Palmer had his own injury issues in 2017, which required shoulder surgery. He started the year on a medical exemption, but knocked out that requirement last week and nearly added a win to his resume this week. He parred the first playoff hole, however, and was done when both Day and Noren birdied. Alex Noren is from Sweden, played golf at Oklahoma State, and earned a spot on the European Tour after his rookie season in 2005 on the Challenge Tour. He has won 9 events on the European Tour since 2009 and found his way to the PGA Tour last year. Noren won one of the European Tour's biggest events, the BMW PGA Championship in Europe last year, and that seems to have given him the confidence he was lacking to compete with the big boys. After 3 rounds of 70, 66, 69, he held the 54-hole lead at 11 under par. Playing with J.B. Holmes in the final group on Sunday was probably not an advantage for him. He carded a 1 over par 73 and ended tied with Palmer and Day. J.B. Holmes, he took over 4 minutes to decide what club to hit on the 18th. It's put golf fans into a full-on assault against slow play. Holmes said he was still trying to win the tournament with an eagle or birdie at the par 5, but in the end pulled an iron and laid up, made a par, and missed the playoff by a single shot. When Day and Noren ended tied and ran out of sunlight after the 5th playoff hole, fans were forced to wait until Monday morning to learn the final result, which only increased their ire at Holmes. So in the Tiger news, there was good news. He made the cut, played 4 rounds, but the bad news, he couldn't find a fairway. But he chipped like a major champion. He only hit 3 fairways on Saturday and 3 more on Sunday. He only had 6 fairways on the weekend. After posting an even par 72 on Thursday, 71 on Friday, he made the cut on the number. He struggled both days. Nothing was easy except for a magnificent iron shot at the par 3 16th that nearly went in the hole for an ace. Saturday was more of the same, but he improved once more with a 70. He moved up 16 spots on Sunday to finish T23 for his first made cut and 4 full rounds of tournament action in 2 years and 5 months. In the end, he was happy just to be back in action and complete a full event. To finish inside the top 25 was a bonus. We will next see Tiger at the Genesis Open at Riviera in 3 weeks. We're already counting down the days, Carlos, right? Other names of note, at one point on Saturday, John Rahm, the hottest golfer in the world right now, had it to 10 under and was in the thick of things. I thought this was his to lose. I thought he was going to win it after Saturday, or after I saw him playing early Saturday. But he ran out of gas and everything went sideways. He finished with a 75, skied to a 77 on Sunday to fall to 229. Thus, he's going to have to try to wait. He's going to have to wait to try to surpass Dustin Johnson for the number one spot in the world. Keegan Bradley. That name keeps popping up a lot, Carlos. He had another top 10. Charlie Howe continued his career practice of starting the year strong with a T6 along with a long-hitting Tony Finau. Justin Rose was T8. Hideki, T12. He tied with Retief Goosen, who's been playing great golf all over the world, actually. Phil Mickelson, T45. Couldn't get it going. Ricky Fowler, Brian Hamm, who's been playing very well this year. They both missed the cut, though. Carlos, all in all, it was a very good week for Tiger, the PGA Tour, and Jason Day. With Day back in top form and healthy, the strength at the top of the PGA Tour is outstanding. We've been saying it. I think that's going to be the theme of the year. What do you think?
Oh, I do agree. I mean, Jason Day was just, like I just mentioned at the beginning, he's just 1 year removed from being number one, so he... Even though he was in the top 10 going into the tournament, it felt like he belonged there. We know his strength. We know how good he is. And we were expecting good things about him. And that, like you said, it just put more and more interest into what is it going to be this year like. Because Rory McIlroy, who I'm going to talk in a little while, is doing great. Dustin Johnson still playing great. Jordan Spieth is there. Justin Thomas is there. Now Jason Day joining them. I mean, and Tiger, if he can get into top form, this is going to be an all-out brawl going into the majors, especially Masters. I can't wait to see all of those guys in top form getting there. But like you mentioned, the thing that I really, oh my goodness, JB Holmes. Oh man. I was so frustrated here. I had to, oh man, I can't say what I did here, but I can't believe how long he had to, Noren had to wait. And Noren, you can visibly, he was really upset. I mean, he was, come on, man, just take the shot. And then he finally lay up. For that, you took 4 minutes to go and lay up. JB, man, that's why they have to speed this thing up. They have to speed this thing up. I mean, Alex didn't deserve that. Jason didn't deserve that. But at the end, they won. Alex Noren, he's just there. I mean, I see him winning very soon there in the PGA Tour. So he's a great player and one of those players that are going to be tough on the Ryder Cup later this year. I saw the interview they made to him right after his third round on Saturday, and he mentioned that what he felt was that his feels were all off. I mean, he just couldn't find a fairway even if his life depended on it. So he said that he just has to work on it, and he started very well on Sunday. He just couldn't find anything. I saw him putting great. He said he was pitching well, chipping well, but his driving is just not there. And I heard Nick Faldo saying that is just a lack of repetitions in tournament competition.
Yeah.
Once he gets that back and he learns how to relax again, those feels will fall into place and he'll be able to go back and do what he's used to do, because he physically, he definitely looks good. He definitely looks good.
Yeah.
And John Ram.
Hey, I gotta say, Alex Noren looked really good. He looked really solid. I was impressed. I know you've been talking about him for a little over a year, and he had a good tournament. I thought he might get Jason, but he couldn't quite make it happen. But he had a good tournament.
Yeah, they battled there. It took them until Monday, but it was a great battle down the stretch. He's a great player to watch. And for John Ram was the last player I wanted to talk about. Like you, I thought he had it until he sank that he dropped the ball in the 18th on Saturday. That was the last hole. He was the only one of the three that hit the fairway. He had it all going to make another birdie and just be one behind Alex Noren going into Sunday, but he dropped it into the water. I don't know what happened there, but he lost all the chances there. His mind went off. He went, instead of having one under on that hole, he went one over and definitely lost it on Sunday. But he's a guy also. I mean, Europe has had a great start with their players to this year, so I keep saying the Ryder Cup is going to be one that the Europeans have started great this year. They're going to have a great team against the Americans going on. Hey, Fred, let's talk about the European Tour, specifically the Omega Dubai District Classic, where Li Haotong of China, he birdied 4 of his last 6 holes there at the Emirates Golf Course to hold off Rory McIlroy and win the Omega Dubai District Classic. Li Haotong fired a final round of 69 at the Emirates Golf Club to stay one stroke ahead of Rory and claim his second European Tour victory. Li began the final day a shot ahead of Rory, but then Rory found himself level at the top of the board after Li dropped a shot at the opening hole on Sunday. McIlroy and Li moved clear, though, and for much of the day, the competition was a two-horse race. But both Alexander Levy of France and Tyrrell Hatton of England looked to get in on the act as the round progressed, and both McIlroy and Li were stumbling. In the end, though, it came down to the top two players, which were McIlroy and Li. The Chinese golfer birdied the 13, 15, 17, and 18 holes to put himself in position and to eventually finish a shot in front of Rory McIlroy. This was the second European Tour title for Li. He also tasted victory in the 2016 Volvo China Open, they would move up into the top 50 now in the official World Golf Rankings and will play at the Masters. The Chinese golfer's winning total of 23 under par was a tournament record. I mean, he saw when after the tournament, they asked him, and he said, the last four holes was some of the best shots in my life so far. Happy to see I can hold a trophy here. I'm looking forward to my first Masters. End of quote. Haley, we are also looking forward to it. And you mentioned something, Fred, when talking about the Omega Dwight Desert Classic, that last year I made a joke after Sergio Garcia won it. I said, hey, Danny Willett won it last year, and he won the Masters. Maybe now Sergio will win the Masters. Little did I know he was going to win it. But, hey, would Lee Hautong will be the next Masters winner? We'll see. I'm making a joke now that it's going to happen. I don't know. But, hey, Rory McIlroy.
I have that. I have that in my notes. I was going to ask you You beat me to it.
No, that's why I mentioned it. I said that you mentioned this, so I'm referring to that. Giving you credit for reminding me of that. So Rory couldn't quite find the form he had shown on days one and two through the weekend. He opened with rounds of 65 and 64. He looks like a world beater those first 2 days. But he was only able to follow 68 and 69 over the last 2 days. Now, that is bad. That was great. But he just didn't look the same player. And he was disappointed not to secure the win, having been in a position to do it. And he said, and it sounded so funny. He said, from being two ahead standing on the 11th tee to being level going into 16, I just don't know. Hey, Rory, you had a freight train that passed by you with four birdies there at the end. So it wasn't you. It was really what Lee Hautong did at the end. Victory in this tournament, like I said, it could be an omen for Lee, the winner of this event of the last two seasons, have gone on to be the winning the Masters. So he will be hoping the trend continues this time around. No fewer than 13 players were tied for sixth place at the end of the week. Among them were Tommy Fleetwood, Ian Poulter, and Henrik Stenson. So a great tournament, good showing there, very good stars playing. But at the end, Lee Hautong, Fred, was the winner at the Omega Dwight Desert Classic.
Yeah, I really, when I saw Rory playing earlier in the week, I really thought Rory was going to win it. But Tong, you know, Lee Tong, he really put it on there on Sunday. And Rory didn't play that bad. You know, he made one or two bogeys that he probably got a little sloppy with, Give Hautong Lee the credit for the win. He did great. Hey, I'm going to tease the listeners a little bit. I'm going back and forth right now with Jay Townsend, who does the commentary on the European Tour on the Golf Channel. So we're going to get him on, and I think we're going to get an interview with him, and we're going to talk about the European Tour. We'll play that for you next week. So, hey, Carlos, the LPGA kicked off their season in the Bahamas this week. You know, and it's great that the LPGA Tour has an event in January to start the year, because for a few years they weren't getting going until later in February, and, you know, they didn't have anything going on. And it's great that they can get going, but the weather on Paradise Island is very erratic this time of year, and it seems they always struggle with weather issues to get this tournament completed. And this week was no different. High winds over 40 miles an hour forced play to be halted and affected shots. They lost 27 hours. They lost a day and a half of play, so they ended up having to cut it to 54 holes. Brittany Lynchcombe, one of the strongest players in the LPGA Tour, birdied four of her last five holes to shoot a 32 on the par 5, 37 back nine, closed with a 66. On the par 73 Ocean Club golf course to get to 12 under par, two strokes ahead of Wee Lin Shi, a 23-year-old from Taiwan. Wee Lin Shi introduced herself to the golf world this week by being in contention. Her eagle putt on the 18th would have tied her with Brittany, but she had to settle for a birdie and finish one shot back of the winner on her as her best finish thus far. She vaults from number 126 in the world to number 84, Just a year ago, she was clear down at 216 in the world. She graduated from the Sumatra Tour in 2014, finished 60th on the money list in 2015, but fell to 103rd in 2016, bounced back last year. Now she's set to have a breakout year. Another name that we haven't heard much of that we kind of keep watching for, Maria Stackhouse, got a big gift this week when she was given a sponsor's exemption into the field. She flew to the Bahamas last weekend to compete in the Monday qualifier, was unsuccessful, but at the last minute was given an exemption and turned that into a T11. If you don't have status on the LPGA Tour, it's very difficult to get into too many of the fields, which makes it nearly impossible for the younger girls to break through. I'm going to make a suggestion to Mike Wan here. I know he listens to the show, and I know he really is impressed with what we have to say, and I know this will carry a lot of weight with him, but let's start in Arizona in January. The weather in Phoenix is much more predictable this time of year, and the fans there love golf, so let's go to Phoenix. Let's save the Bahamas for another month or something, maybe March. On another subject, Carlos, the LPGA announced today that 31-time winner, 7-time major champion, will become the first 3-time USA captain of the 2019 Solheim Cup to be played on the world-famous PGA Centenary Course at the Glen Eagles Hotel in Perthshire, Scotland, from September 13th to 15th, 2019. The U.S. will head to Scotland, leading Europe 10-5 all-time in Solheim Cup competition. Inkster said, "This is an unbelievable honor and one I do not take lightly. I'm so stoked to be able to take the U.S. team to Scotland, the home of golf, to compete in the 2019 Solheim Cup. We can't wait to get started." Inkster is 57, and the U.S. squad will look to successfully defend their title on European soil, pitted against hometown legend and first-time Team European captain Katrina Mathieu. You know, Carlos, this is one of those things everyone knew, but the official announcement just came out today. So, your thoughts?
Now, like I said, when you sent me the notification that they were going to announce it today at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. Eastern time, I remember replying to you, well, they'll just make official what we already know. Or everybody knows, which is Julie Inkster. You already know that it had to be her, because when there's going to be a change on the top of either the Solheim Cup or the Ryder Cup, you already know who's going to be next. You start talking about that person, and there was no chat about anybody else becoming captain again. I mean, becoming captain with Julie. Basically, Julie is beloved by all the players in the U.S. team. She's beloved by any of them that are going to be playing there, and they play their hearts off for her. And, I mean, she's a great, great captain. She's definitely proven when they won two editions ago when they staged that big comeback, her poise, her tempo for this, and she... There couldn't be anybody right now that could replace Julie. But in the other side, Katrina, she's going to be at home. She's going to have a tough challenge. I mean, the Americans, I don't see them losing next year unless there comes somebody from the European side and starts playing. It's not like in the Ryder Cup that we see the Europeans regrouping and playing well again. There we just don't see anything for Katrina, just like happened for Annika. So... the best of luck to Julie. I know she's going to do a great job, and everybody's going to play great for her. Just wanted to, before moving on to the Web.com Tour recap, just wanted to give a shout-out to my countrywoman, Maria Torres. She opened with a 70, and she was there near the top of the leaderboards. Not on the top, but she was in the top 10 that first day. But then with the once it got suspended, and got shortened, that's when she fell off. She went with 74 and 75. I didn't expect her to be anywhere near the top in this first tournament, but definitely she finished with a T31. Great showing, Maria. Keep going. Everybody in Puerto Rico is pulling for you, so go ahead. Puerto Rico needs those great news from their athletes. And I want to second that thought that you're saying about starting maybe in Phoenix or somewhere else where you know it's going to be dry at the beginning of the year. The problem that I see overall with changing the Bahamas at any time after that, I mean, any time, is going to be unpredictable. And if you put it after May, it's hurricane season. So it has to be either before that, but you are going to run into the same place, same scenario where it can rain, it can change, and then it can happen with the wind. Anything can happen in the Bahamas at any time. That's just the Caribbean being the Caribbean. So we'll see. But we know, I mean, Michael Wan may be the best executive right now in golf. So we know he knows what to do with this. But the Ministry of Tourism there, who's a major sponsor of that tournament, is doing a great job organizing. So a big shout out to him. Hey, Fred, let's talk about the Web.com Tour. The Bahamas Great Abaco Classic ended up last Wednesday, and Canadian Adam Svensson closed with a 4-under-68 for a one-shot victory on Wednesday in the Bahamas Great Abaco Classic at the Abaco Club. In his 58th career start on the tour, he began the final round one shot out of the lead and seized control when Willie Wilcox took a triple bogey on the 11th. Even with a bogey on the par 3 17, Svensson held on to win by one shot over Sungjae Im of South Korea, who shot a 69. Ryan Gibson of Australia had a 67 and finished third. Wilcox made seven straight pars after his triple bogey and shot 73 to tie for fourth. Svensson finished at 17 under, 271. It was his first professional victory. And what a difference a year makes for the 24-year-old from Surrey in British Columbia. Svensson missed the cut at both Bahamas events to start the 2017 season, found himself behind the eight ball all year. He ultimately made it to the Web.com Tour Finals, but he finished one spot out of securing his PGA Tour car. So the former Barry University standout thought about it all off season, but used it as a motivation this year after a tie for 13th in the Bahama Great Exuma Classic and a win now in the Abaco. Svensson has moved to number two on the tour money list, firmly inside the top 25 and just behind Sungjae Im. So with this victory in the Bahamas, 18 players from Canada have won 25 tournaments on the Web.com Tour. Ben Silverman was the last to add to the total with his triumph at the Price Cutter Charity Championship presented by Dr. Pepper last year. Silverman and Corey Connors finished inside the top 50 to earn their PGA Tour cards and join fellow Web.com Tour alumni Adam Hadwin, Mackenzie Hughes, and David Tern on tour. Fred Benson hopes to be the next star from the Great White North, so the 24-year-old looking up, looking good.
Yeah, that's what happens. These young guys, you know, they get a little bit of confidence or they work a little bit harder or whatever, and all of a sudden they're up on the leaderboard. Hey, Carlos, we want to just give a brief overview and kind of my final thoughts from the PGA show. As you know, we spent 3 days up there enjoying seeing all of the featured products on the 10 miles of aisles. Technology was the theme of the show as more and more companies are using technological advancements to enhance their products. One of the things that caught my eye was the fact that Encore Golf Ball Company has developed a hollow center in their golf ball, and in the future will be able to include, they're going to put a little cage, a little steel cage inside there, which will include microchips. And so they will be able to provide actual distance, spin rate, ball speed, all that stuff, other data to groove your game and swing. If you're a numbers cruncher, you're going to be able to get all that. And while we wait for that, their current ball, the Elixir, fuses metal with Serlin to create a responsive and soft ball that works well for any golfer. Tour Edge Company is a lesser-known club manufacturer that's producing clubs at a lower price point but gives the same quality of performance as Titleist, Ping, or Callaway. Their high launch is for the average golfer, and the CBX line is for the lower handicap player that demands performance. Tour Edge has been known for years for their exotics shafts that the top players insert in their clubs. If you haven't tried Tour Edge lately, try some of their clubs. If you're an average golfer, try the High Launch product, the irons and the woods and the hybrids. They're very nice. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to swap out my Taylor. I'm swapping out my TaylorMade driver for a Tour Edge High Launch. I really do like it. I played with it a couple rounds already and really, really like it. V1 is a company that has been around for 20 years. I tried their technology over 10 years ago in working with students to show their swings on video and break it down with all the lines and things that you can do, make comments on the video. They were one of the leaders in online teaching techniques, and by using the newest advancements are once again climbing to the top of the video training market for instructors. There are far too many other products that weren't mentioned, but we simply do not have time here today. But we're going to try to get some of the company's representatives on future shows to talk about their products, Carlos. And also, I taped a lot of video there. So over the next month or so, we will have some of those people on tape on Back 9 Report TV, if you're watching that. So we'll have some stuff there, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our week in backspin. That was the recap of all the action on the major tours. But now let's talk to you about what's going to happen this week on all the major tours. There's going to be the PGA Tour, European Tour, and Web.com Tour. The LPGA and the Champions Tour are going to be off. So, Fred, tell us all about the big event. And I mean it big because, I mean, that place is packed. I don't know how they pack so many people at the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Yeah, that is for sure. I wouldn't want to be there. I'm telling you that right now. But if it's Super Bowl week, which it is, you know it's time for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. And that raucous atmosphere on the 16th hole, that stadium hole with the skyboxes surrounding the entire par 3. Something unique happening at the Waste Management this week, though. Pros will have the option of only playing 9 holes with their amateur partners. At the end of 9 holes, another pro will step in to fill their spot. This method gives more pros involved in the pro-ams, plus the amateurs get to meet and play with 2 pros rather than just 1. Most important, the pros don't have to suffer watching mere mortals hack it around for more than a couple of hours at a time, which can be painful for them, I know. The Waste Management Phoenix Open is always one of the most exciting events on the PGA Tour every year, with that 16-hole stadium atmosphere. Rowdy fans, interaction with the players, it always draws the largest crowds, especially on Saturday. I mean, the numbers just go through the roof. The tournament is competed on TPC Scottsdale, which was designed by Jay Morrish and Tom Weisskopf. It opened for play in 1986. The total purse is $6.9 million, with $1.2 going to the winner. The first 2 rounds can be viewed on the Golf Channel, 1 to 5 p.m. Golf Channel also has the early call on the weekend starting at 11:30 both days. CBS will be broadcasting beginning at 1 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday, Carlos.
And like I said before, this is the best attended event on the world golf. I mean, the tournament estimated attendance at 655,434 last year surpassed the home attendance of the Arizona Cardinals, who was 513,741. 8 games the Arizona Cardinals could not put as much people as 4 days of this tournament. Many of those
things
that hit the cauldron, like, yeah, when I saw that stat, I was like, wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's 140,000 people more than 8 games of the Arizona Cardinals. That's huge. And like you mentioned, many of those head for that cauldron-like amphitheater that surrounds the par 316, which has been seen of many dramatic moments in the past. And when Tiger Woods aced the hole in 1997, the cheer could be heard 10 miles away. Of course, that's just a plain city, but I mean 10 miles away you can hear the cheer when Tiger Woods is at hole. But at the other end of the spectrum, you see, for example, when Justin Leonard was not so popular when he gave the crowd the finger after they taunted him for a poor shot. that's just what happens, right? That's part of the game in there, and everybody knows. And I like it when the players play up to the fans there. They really acknowledge them. You see them come with gifts, and they start throwing them out to the bleachers and all that. It's really real fun. And Hideki Matsuyama, he's going to try to be – I mean, if there's a horse for the course, there's Hideki Matsuyama here, because he has not finished worse than fourth in his four appearances at TPC Scottsdale. He's aiming to become the first player to win a tournament 3 years in a row on the PGA Tour since Steve Stricker achieved that feat in the John Deere Classic from 2009 to 2011. It's going to be worth to see that. Jordan Spieth is going to be there. Julian Suri is a player that I want you to look out. He grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. He's earned his European Tour card through the Challenge Tour and is playing on a sponsor's exception for the second straight week. That's a very good player, American, that made himself through the Challenge Tour and now is trying to earn some sponsors here in the States and maybe possibly play there. Playing the PGA Tour and earn his card. Now let's move on to see what's going to happen on the European Tour, the Maybank Championship. It's going to be played at the course Sahuana and Golf and Country Club, which is an undulating one line by palm trees that opened for play back in 1986. It plays at 7,186 yards, par 72, and scoring seems to be pretty good. And Fabrizio Zanotti won last year with an impressive total of 19 under par. Last year, following a tremendous final round of 63 in last year's main bank, Zanotti claimed his second European Tour victory. He carded an eagle on his 72nd hole, and he did just enough to sneak past David Lipsky of the U.S. to win by a shot. The race to Dubai leader right now is Thomas Fleetwood. Like I mentioned, Lee Hao Tong won the Omega Dubai Desert Classic last week, and he's playing here for the third straight week on the tour. He's the first Chinese to be cracked the top 50 in the world, first male Chinese to crack the top 50 in the world. This will be only the third time that the competition has been hosted. Although Sahuana has been a regular stop on the circuit in the past, the club has hosted the Malaysian Open on a number of occasions. In last year's Maybank Championship, Austria's Bernd Wiesberger made European Tour history during his second round. He carded 9 straight birdies from the 7th to the 15 holes, and he was the first man on the circuit to achieve such a feat. He's going to be back this year. Henrik Stenson is the highest-ranked player leading the field in Malaysia. Also playing is former Masters champion Danny Willett. Darren Clark is in the field. He has not made the cut in an European Tour since Royal Tour in the 2016 British Open. Ryo Ishikawa of Japan is playing on a sponsor's exemption. Also getting an invitation was Chisuke Miyasato, who finished at number 50 last year to earn a spot in the Masters. Coming off 2 weeks in the UAE, the European Tour goes next to Australia before returning to the Middle East for 2 tournaments in Oman and Qatar. If you want to watch this on TV, it starts Wednesday, the coverage, at 10:30 p.m. and then 2:30 a.m. on Thursday on Golf Channel. Thursday and Friday is going to be 2:30 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. also on Golf Channel, and Friday and Saturday 9:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. in the Golf Channel. Remember, they're playing in Malaysia. They're way ahead of us. So that is what is going to happen next week. It's going to be the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth in Australia, Fred.
Yeah, the Web.com tour moves from the Bahamas over to Central America for the Panama Championship and gets back to normal Thursday through Sunday schedule. You know, they've been playing that Sunday-Wednesday deal, but they're going to go back to Thursday-Sunday this week. 4 former PGA Tour players are teeing it up this week in Panama: Spencer Levine, Brian Davis, Eric Compton, and two-time major champion Angel Cabrera is going to be teeing it up down in Panama. So that should be fun, something to watch. They're playing for slightly less than the PGA Tour this week with a $625,000 total purse, $112,000 going to the winner. You can see it all on the Golf Channel, so look that up. But should be in the afternoon on that. So, as you mentioned, Champions Tour and the LPGA Tour are off this week. So, Carlos, excuse me. We want to talk a minute about Boyne Resort in northern Michigan. They have 10 golf courses at 3 different locations right around Petoskey, Michigan. The Highlands Mountain, the Bay Harbor Clubs are all within a short driving distance of each other. You can stay in one location and add rounds at any of the other two. Whatever course you play, do not miss a chance to play the Bay Harbor Club with its gorgeous views of Little Traverse Bay. If you want a 5-star accommodation, stay at the highly acclaimed Bay Harbor Inn and enjoy treatment normally reserved for royalty. Even though it's winter, now is the perfect time to take advantage of their early discounts. To book your summer golf trip to northern Michigan, visit boyne.com/golf. That's boyne.com/golf, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our four-call or quick previews of the weekend's action on the major tours. And now we move on to the Par 5 news. And, Fred, we have talked about this before, about the Ladies European Tour. Last year they had to cancel 8 tournaments. And we talked about the possibility of maybe the LPGA, maybe the European Tour, maybe somebody else stepping in to help them. And you have some news about the Ladies European Tour. Is it going to survive? What's going on? What's the latest on the status of the Ladies European Tour?
Well, LaWayne Mayer had an interesting take in Global Golf Post last week about the Ladies European Tour. As you mentioned, we reported last year about the LET refusing the assistance of the PGA and LPGA Tours to help get the European Women's Tour back on sound footing. In 2017, the LET shrank to just 15 events and went through the summer months with no tournaments for a full 6-week period. Lack of TV time and sponsors' dollars are making it difficult for the Ladies European Tour to conduct a full schedule of events. In the article, Michael Lichtenstein, who began overseeing the operation of the Ladies European Tour shortly before the Solheim Cup last year, said they didn't really reject the generous offer out of hand from the PGA Tour and the LPGA, but deferred to talk again this spring. Since then, the LET has added 3 new events with 2 more on the horizon and should get their 2018 schedule up to 20 tournaments. So that's respectable. It's not great, but it's respectable. In a timely topic, Lichtenstein said, for example, in the Victoria Open that will be held in Australia, it is a co-sanctioned event with the Australian Tour and will feature both men and women, plus equal pay for both. We're going to talk more about that later. The Ladies European Tour does currently work with the LPGA with the co-sanctioned Women's Scottish Open and, of course, the Women's British Open. The ideal for the LET would be a partnership with the RNA. But there has been nothing rumored or announced about that happening anytime soon. The RNA did take over the Ladies European Union, which conducts women's amateur events, and has said they want to actively promote women's golf. Carlos, the LET is trying to stay independent and keep the Solheim Cup relevant. The LPGA Tour commissioner's idea was to make the LET more like a feeder tour for the LPGA. If that were the case, the Solheim Cup may become irrelevant, but it could open the door to an Asian American U.S. Solheim Cup competition. That would probably see the American women lose every 2 years, so we wouldn't want that. So I hope the LET survives, Carlos.
Yeah. We wouldn't want that. I mean, South Korea can do just a team by themselves. They don't need anybody else.
Exactly. they can field two teams.
Field teams easily. And yeah. They will battle each other at the end. But no, that it's a thing that we're going to keep track on. It really, at the end of the day, we don't want to see the Ladies European Tour, which has been for so long. That battleship there for the European ladies is closer to home. It's closer for them, even though they also go around the world, just like the European Tour does in the men. They are a really good tour for them. They just need the problem is just like, I don't want to give it up yet, but we're going to talk about this when we talk about the difference in pace from the women and the men later on the practice range. But there's certainly the problem that you mentioned, no lack of coverage, lack of promotion. If you don't have that, you're not going to get the money and you're not going to survive, but hopefully they'll find something to work it on. Hey, Fred, I think that Sir Nick Faldo hit a home run when he announced the inaugural Major Champions Invitational to be played March 12th through the 14th, 2018 at Bella Colina in Monteverde in Florida, hosted by World Golf Hall of Famer member Nick Faldo. The 2018 Major Champions Invitational will be supported by Major Champions, providing juniors, male or female, with a one-of-a-kind competition experience. An extension of the Faldo series, the Major Champions Invitational will embody the same overall mission, to give opportunities to young people through golf and help identify the next generation of champions. In other words, this new tournament will provide Major Champions an opportunity to mentor and inspire that next generation of players while giving back to the game. In addition to Faldo, PGA Tour professionals Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth will support the effort at the inaugural event. McIlroy is a four-time major champion, spent 95 weeks as world number one in the official World Golf rankings between 2012 and 2015, and he's a past Faldo Series champion. So he knows about how to become better through this series. Jordan Spieth is the owner of three major championship titles, including the 2017 Open Championship, and has spent a cumulative 26 weeks at number one since 2015. Other major champions who have committed to support include Annika Sorenstam, Adam Scott, John Daly, that would be interesting, Ernie Els, Henrik Stenson, and Gerry Pate. That inaugural event, like I said, will be played March 12th to the 14th this year at Bella Colina in Monteverde in Florida. Bella Colina is a 19,000-acre private club community in the rolling hills of central Florida, just west of Orlando. And it's widely known for the Nick Faldo design course and the iconic 75,000-square-foot Tuscan-inspired clubhouse. Bella Colina is one of the finest private clubs and waterfront communities in the world. And Fred, proceeds from the event will benefit the Faldo Trust for Tomorrow's Children, which is a U.S. 501c3 organization. For more information on this, visit the Major Champions Invitational.com.
Hey, Carlos. Next up tonight in the news, Pat Perez said he's not that excited about the Ryder Cup. Matter of fact, he's a little pissed off. You know, he's been playing very well over the past couple of years, and it started out 2018 with a win at the CIMB and a T5 at the inaugural CJ Cup at Nine Bridges. But both events give FedEx Cup points, but not Ryder Cup team ranking points. So he did capture a fourth place finish at the Century Tournament of Champions in Hawaii, which, you know, is good for a lot of Ryder Cup points, but he's still well down the list on the Ryder Cup ranking. It cleared down to 17th. Asked if making the team was a priority, not really for me, he said. Even though I won in Malaysia and finished high in Korea, I should be third or fourth in the rankings. It kind of put a bitter taste in my mouth that I beat some very good players but don't get any Ryder Cup points. There's a long time yet. If I continue to play well, I could still make the team. Perez went on, apparently the PGA doesn't think those events are worthy of Ryder Cup consideration. I haven't talked with Jim Furyk about it, and I don't think they're too concerned with my opinion. Carlos, I know it's early in a Ryder Cup year, but you would think that those fall wraparound events would offer Ryder Cup team points. Perez has definitely been one of the top players in the world for the past 2 years. He has deserved a spot on the team at this point. To be clear, down in 17th is just wrong, as well as he's been playing, especially the last year.
I see it the other way around. If you know, I mean, if you know that you want to make the Ryder Cup, it's just like the Paul Casey case. Why don't you play the tournaments that you know that are going to get you those points? It's plenty simple to me. I mean, I just would go to the ones, but look at this. He was in Singapore playing 2 weeks, last 2 weeks ago, and last week he was in Europe when his father is the announcer at Torrey Pines. What the heck are you doing in Europe playing there? You finished T29, you're not earning anything. You had Torrey Pines here. You could have earned more money.
Can you say big appearance fees
for Pat Perez? No way.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely. No. I guarantee it. That's the only reason he's there.
Yeah, in Singapore and then in Dubai? No. No, that means you don't really want to play the Ryder Cup. I'm sorry, Pat. No way. I mean, if you really want to play for your country and play in the Ryder Cup, you do whatever is possible to make those points. Doesn't matter if you go to the out to the other tournaments. That's what Europe does, the same thing. They have their tournaments, and they tell you you have to play here. Why do you think Paul Casey had to go back and become a member of the European Tour to play there for his team, the European team, in the Ryder Cup? Otherwise, he wouldn't have made it. So I don't buy it. I don't buy it. He just doesn't want to play. He just doesn't want to play the Ryder Cup. I don't see him either as that time of the team player that is going to be, all these players that are right now on the PGA Tour of the Ryder Cup on the American team.
Yeah.
Are really gelling together. Most of them even hang out outside of the tournaments. And that's what really has taken that team to gel as one and become the force that they are right now, because that's what the Europeans used to do. Now that they have that part down, I don't think Pat mixes well in that group. So that's why, to him, he's just playing it out that way. Anyway, let's move on. Again, let's talk about the commish. Yes, he is the commish, Mike Wann. Before exiting to attend the PGA merchandise show in Orlando, the PGA commissioner Mike Wann went to the Ocean Club and made a bit of news. I mean, when he was asked in an informal roundtable on Wednesday if he thought a mixed event with the LPGA and PGA Tours was a possibility for 2019, the commish said, and he said a lot, so let's start talking about it. He said, and I quote, "Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought it was possible for 2018 if you asked me 6 months ago. The only reason I say that is because both sides want to figure it out." The commissioner said that the hard part is that Jay Monahan, who is a PGA Tour commissioner, doesn't have 26 weeks of availability, and they were in different parts of the world at a lot of the time. But given that, he really thinks he's possible. So what would a mixed event look like? That is still up in the air. Nobody knows. But one is one not to let small details ground a good idea. And he said that in the beginning they were focused on having it to be like an official event with official money. They just wanted to go out, make it a big deal right off the bat. But then he told all of them, hey, we just ought to get started. Whether that's a Tuesday afternoon or a 3-day event, because he thinks, and I totally agree with that, once he started, it will build a momentum of its own. It's just like the same ideas that Keith Pelly is doing right now in the European Tour. He's just starting them, and they're gaining momentum. Sometimes you spend all the time trying to figure out things, and when you wake up, like he said, it's 6 years later, And he said that it's easy to build on ideas, but it's harder to get them really off the ground. So he added that he would be surprised if they were not doing something with the PGA Tour by next year. He knows exactly what that means, but when there are two parties who want to do it, things usually get it done. And he knows it's a priority for Jay because they talk about it all the time. So he did give a hint about what they said. He has in his mind, and I'm going to quote him. He said, in a perfect world, you want Jordan Spieth and Lexi Thompson teamed up, so you've got Jordan reading Lexi's putts, and they're talking to each other about strategy. I know we all want an official event where everybody's playing their own ball, but what the fans want is Bubba Watson playing with Sandra Gall and them working out the course together. End of quote. Fred, that would indeed be compelling television.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they put this thing together. I know they're trying to work together and do some stuff, and we're going to talk some more about this in a minute when we get to the Stacey Lewis thing. But Michael's trying to be like Pelle, like Keith Pelle. He's willing to try about anything. He wants to get their product on TV more, and if he has to cozy up with the PGA Tour to get that done, he has no problem doing it. So, Carlos, let's talk about tennis a little bit. Tennis, anyone? Jessica and Nelly Korda's 17-year-old little brother is making a name for himself in a sport as well. He won the boys' division of the 2018 Australian Open last week. The Kordas have done pretty well in Australia. Sebastian, who is 17, won the Boys Australian Open over Sangshun Sin of Taiwan, 7-6 and then 6-4. Of course, big sis Jessica won the 2012 Women's Australian Open at Royal Melbourne. But the biggest family win in Australia came when Daddy Peter Korda, who was a very successful tennis professional, won the 1998 Australian Open, which is one of tennis' major tournaments. Now, with Jessica and Nelly both on the LPGA Tour and Sebastian showing signs of becoming a professional tennis pro, the Kordas are rapidly becoming one of the most successful sports families of all time. Father Peter grew up in Czechoslovakia and moved to Florida, plus he maintains a residence in Monaco. His wife, Regina, was also a tennis professional. So the gene pool for the Korda's offspring is predominant in athletic competition. Jessica is the oldest of 24 and has 4 LPGA Tour wins on her resume already. Nelly is only 19 and just joined the tour full-time last year. She won the Sioux Falls Great Life Challenge on the Sumatra Tour in 2016 to earn her LPGA Tour card. I think we're going to be seeing the Korda name winning women's golf events with regularity in the future, and hopefully we haven't heard the last of Sebastian either, Carlos.
Oh, no, he's a great player. He reminds me a lot of his dad. I mean, of course, his dad would have been a lot more famous if he didn't get the doping suspension that really derailed him. But he was right there, and the Kordas, all of them, Nelly, Jessica, and Sebastian right now, they have all inherited those athletic abilities. They're really, really good, and certainly we know that Jessica's already an established player. Nelly's on the upswing. Last year she finished second to Sungyeom Park and for the Rookie of the Year, but she's right there. She has also the ability to make it to the top, and Sebastian's just getting started, so look forward to that. But with that, Fred, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news. Now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week, Susie Whaley. We have her again on the show, and Fred, she will later this year become the first female to be the head of the PGA of America. So tell us a little bit about this interview that you have for us.
Yeah, we were warming up on Sunday morning on the range at PGA Village, and I looked down the way, and just like three golfers over, there was Susie hitting some balls and warming up as well. The PGA pros, of course, have a lot of events going on at PGA Village, you know, through the month of January, especially the week after the PGA show. A lot of guys go down there and play, and they hold a lot of events down there. They were having a two-man tournament, and she was paired with her husband. They were teamed together. They were going to play as a team, and so she was out hitting some balls, getting ready to go. And so I walked down and asked her if she could give me a minute to tape something when she was done. She said, absolutely. So when she was done, she came over and got me, and we taped this real quick. So we talk about a couple different things. We talk about her becoming the first woman president of the PGA. We talk a little bit about equal pay for women. So, and we talk a little bit about the PGA show. So, Carlos, go ahead and run it.
Let's run it.
We're here in the range at PGA Village in Port St. Lucie, and Susie Whaley's out here warming up. How's it going?
It's going fantastic. My husband and I are teaming up in the Stableford in the Winter Series. So we're excited. We're excited to be partners.
Just coming off the PGA show, I think it's next year, you take over the reins at PGA of America. Looking forward to that.
I am. November 2018 at the annual meeting in Palm Springs. Hopefully, fingers crossed, elected to the presidency, and looking forward to the team, us really moving forward and advancing our PGA professionals' well-being and getting more people on golf courses.
Coming up through the chairs, you've been seeing what the other guys have been doing. Is there something, is there an agenda, something you're looking forward to being able to get done?
You know, I think we're all excited about our advancements in employment. We want to make sure our PGA professionals are valued by employers across the country and around the world as the leading experts in the game. So we're really advocates of that. We're going to promote that through PSAs, through stories, through telling the journey of a PGA professional, the education component that they've gone through. You know, I think there's a lot of people that aren't aware that we go through 4 years of education after university education just to begin the process of becoming a member. And then we have members that are certified and master professionals. So we have the experience to really help people get their games in good shape, to help employers make sure their facilities are valued by their communities. And we're excited to tell that story.
Coming off the PGA show, is there a takeaway that you got from that? Is there something that caught your eye, or maybe a new product or something that that you really were excited to see?
You know, I think technology is certainly the buzz at the show, and how we can advance that in each and every individual's golf game, whether it be easy tracking on the golf course through Game Golf, whether it be just looking at your stats and enjoying that, whether it be going to a Topgolf, experiencing golf in a way that they never have before, incorporating the tradition of 18 holes of golf play that you and I love and are passionate about, but also introducing the game to people who perhaps have never had that opportunity in a way that's fun and exciting, and that's what was neat at the show.
Get you out of here on one last question. Stacey Lewis published an essay last week about equal pay for women in the golf game. Your thought and maybe comment on that.
The PGA of America, we're always looking for opportunities for women in golf. We're really proud of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. We're proud of the fact that they have a purse that's the second highest in the women's game, and we're constantly looking to elevate women in the golf course.
Fantastic. Susie, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.
That was Susie Whaley there, very insightful, and for 2 minutes and a half, Fred, you put a lot of topics on the table for her. And right now, let's, before you continue to talk about that, let me say that Mike May is with us, so let's welcome Mike to the show. Mike, are you on?
I'm doing well. How are you, Carlos? It's a pleasure to be on the air with you guys tonight.
Great, Mike. Fred. Here's Mike with us.
Well, I'm sitting upstairs in Mike's house, and he's downstairs on the phone. So
oh, really?
We're not that far apart. Mike is hosting us down here for a couple days, and is kind enough to invite us down. And so we're down here checking out Jupiter and Palm Beach, and Mike lives just down here by West Palm. And so we were talking today, and we said, well, let's have you on, and we'll talk a little bit about the Stacey Lewis thing. But Carlos, before we get to that, excuse me, let me just do the French lick thing, and then we'll lead you into that. How about that? Okay.
Excellent.
The French Lick Resort has been serving guests since 1845, when they first came to the area for the soothing waters. the West Bay and Springs Hotel with its remarkable 200-foot domed atrium. Originally built in 1855, was named the eighth wonder of the world. It is an awe-inspiring marvel even today. The great Larry Bird put the area on the map with his Hall of Fame basketball career, but the French Lick Resort has always offered the finest service and hospitality to thousands of visitors every year. The French Lick Casino offers popular games of chance, and the resort offers the best cuisine available in any of the several restaurants on the property. Guests receive tenderloving care at the spa, plus the French Lick Resort has two fabulous golf courses. The Donald Ross course first opened in 1917, and the Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship over Englishman who, Mike? Who'd he beat?
Long Jim Barnes, who comes from the western part of England and the West Cornwall Golf Club, my old golf course.
The Pete Dye course sits atop the second highest peak in Indiana and provides views for up to 40 miles. It has hosted numerous big events. The PGA of America held the 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course, plus it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA Championship, and the Women's Legend Tour recently held the first ever Senior Women's LPGA Championship on the Pete Dye course. Later this summer, they'll be having a Symmetra Tour and the second Senior Women's LPGA there in French Lick as well. The French Lick Resort needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites. To book your stay at the French Lick Resort, visit FrenchLick.com. Carlos?
And now let's go to the practice range where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each one of us take our own shots at it. But this is a big one. So that's why we have brought in Mike, and we also have a take from Steve Eubanks weighing in on the essay that Stacey Lewis did. And let's just make an introduction of the topic. I mean, we hear it about it all the time, the gender pay gap between men and women. The issue has become an area of increasing attention, and with good reason. Is it fair for one person or a group of persons to be given a different pay for doing the same job? In a perfect world, the short answer is, of course it isn't. Unfortunately, this isn't a perfect world. Golf certainly isn't a perfect game. And our sport is no exception when it comes to gender pay gap. However, examine the situations with an added variable. What if, despite the fact that they are producing the same product, one group has a higher demand for their work? Isn't it fair that they earn a higher salary since there is a higher demand for their work? That is the case in professional golf today. Professional female golfers are making significantly less money than their male counterparts, and the reason is obvious. Less people are watching female professional golf. But Stacey Lewis, this week, as you have known, gender and how public-private partnerships can bridge inequality is an agenda item in the World Economic Forum underway in Davos. And adding to the discussion, LPGA standout Stacey Lewis penned an essay for conference attendees on the earnings gap between men and women in golf. And that's what we're going to be talking about. First, we're going to bring in the interview that Fred had with Steve Eubanks. And after that, we'll bring Fred and Mike to start talking, debating on this, and then I'll weigh in afterwards. So let's hear Steve Eubanks and that interview that you did with him, Fred.
We're happy to be talking with Steve Eubanks, senior golf writer for Global Golf Post. Steve, welcome back to Back Nine Report.
Well, great to be with you. Thank you for having me, as always.
Wanted to talk with you a little bit about the essay that Stacey Lewis posted last week and about equal pay for the women golfers. Women LPGA purses are probably about one-sixth of what the PGA Tour is. They don't get the TV time. They don't feel like they're getting the respect that they deserve as top-notch players. Why do you think she picked this time to publish that essay?
Oh, it was for the World Economic Forum in Davos. And, in fact, that was who it was geared toward. When it went out, one of her primary sponsors is KPMG, and they were the people who delivered it to all of the participants at the World Economic Forum.
she puts this down in writing, and she makes a point. One of the things she says in there, golf is a numbers game, plain and simple. The ball doesn't know if you're a 6 foot, 6'240 pounds, or like me, just 5'5", 132. Take the fewest strokes and you win, period. So, I mean, isn't she kind of defeating her point, though? I mean, you know, economics and the tours, what they're paid, it's all about the numbers. They just, you know, the women's game just doesn't generate the fan base and the sponsor income that the men's tour does right now. So they're not going to make equal pay based on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, her point is, look, if you put us out on television, we don't draw bad ratings. I mean, if you look at the events where they have been on network television, they've done fine. And certainly the Solheim Cup had over 7 million viewers. Now, that's a, you know, that is a substantial sum in terms of people tuning in to see. So I think her point is a network needs to give us a shot. And if a network does give us a shot, then the sponsors start seeing the eyeballs. Then it starts making more sense for them to come into the game. Then the purses go up accordingly. And later on in the piece, she actually says it's all about television. And she's right on that front. It is all about television. And, you know, I talked to Mike Wan about this, and I said, well, you know, the women don't generate the numbers that the men do. And he said it's because the men are on CBS and NBC, and the women are on the Golf Channel. And you just simply are not going to generate as much viewership on a cable outlet as you are on network television. And he's right on that front. So for a network to come in and say, okay, we'll give you 12 weeks. I mean, they buy 12 weeks worth of very bad sitcoms and put it out there. I don't know why they wouldn't try the same on women's golf.
Well, you know, the Marathon Classic was on Sunday afternoon 2 years ago, and I think Marathon had to pony up an extra $1 million or something, $500,000 to get that done, something like that, for
all
CBS to put it on.
All the LPGA events that are on network televisions are time buys. That is what is extraordinary to me. Rather than a network saying, okay, we will pay you in order to put the event on television and then go sell the advertising accordingly, the networks come to the LPGA and or their sponsors and say, hey, you're welcome to buy this time just like an infomercial, but you know, we're certainly not going to pay you to have it out there.
One last question. Does this essay, do you feel, does this help the LPGA and Michael Wan, or does it hurt it? Do sponsors now that have been raising their purse or coming in and supporting the LPGA say, hey, what about me? I'm not chopped liver. I've been helping grow your game, and you're telling me you're disappointed because I'm not paying you enough? Is it?
Clearly, I know Stacey was not putting this out with the current sponsors in mind. She is certainly not going to the people at KPMG who have done a tremendous job and saying to them, you haven't done enough. Or Tom Murray with Pure Silk, who has not only had the Pure Silk Classic lead the tour in terms of its opening event for the last several years, he sponsors 15 LPGA players. So, I mean, look, he's doing as much as anyone. This is not towards those people. This is towards a lot of other sponsors who are out there talking a good game about equality right now and making sure that, you know, we support women in this or that area. But when it comes to putting their money where their mouth is and sponsoring the most successful women's sports league in history, they're not doing it.
Been talking with Steve Eubank, senior writer for Global Golf Post. He follows the LPGA very closely every week. Steve, thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks, Fred. Good to be with you.
There you have it. That was Steve Eubank. And Fred and Mike, now it's your turn to take on this subject. After that, I'll give you my take on it. So, Fred, take it on, and you and Mike.
Okay. Well, Steve illustrates Stacy's point exactly. She and Michael Wan want more network TV exposure. It's like the chicken and the egg. They know that if CBS and NBC would carry more LPGA events on the weekends, more people would see them and become fans. Golf Channel's great, but it's still a cable network with limited viewership. This was a coordinated effort by KPMG and the LPGA Tour to raise awareness of the product that the LPGA is producing and change the dynamic of network television to provide the time and then sell the advertising to their top clients. The resistance of the network, however, is to not oversell or inundate their current clients, rather than go find new advertisers that would pay for the LPGA time. Maybe this is what the PGA Tour and the LPGA Marketing Alliance is all about, trying to leverage the PGA Tour's considerable clout with NBC and CBS to gain valuable TV time on the weekends for the LPGA Tour events. If the LPGA is to continue to grow and increase purses, the LPGA has to have network television coverage on the weekends. This was all very carefully arranged between Michael Wan, KPGMG, and Stacey Lewis to put this out there, guys.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, I mean,
Mike, you there?
Yeah, okay. I'm here. Okay. Just I was collecting my thoughts. This whole issue of equality, if the men played in the same tournament as the women, then they would have a right. But they're playing two different events, two different places, and it's about the numbers. And if the numbers are greater, the purses will be greater, the sponsors will be greater. They have a great product. And one thing that many people forget about is the average player would probably learn more by identifying and watching the women play because they hit similar distances to we do, and they hit shots and are situations that are more like an average player. Obviously, they're not average players. They're top-class professionals, but the distances they hit are more in line with the distances that a good single-digit amateur player can hit. They just have better short games. They get up and down, make putts, and focus on those things, then their numbers, you know, might improve. But it's they've got a good gig. It's come a long way, baby, since the very beginning, and they just need to stay at it and continue to market and promote what they do well. And the pro-ams make a bigger effort. Not that they don't, but you've got to make a bigger effort to connect with the sponsors and those who attend and become more people-oriented. Not that they aren't, but they just need to maybe focus that way, and the numbers will improve.
You know, one of the things that has been brought up to the attention of this as well is that they're trying to compare it to the tennis world, where the men and women, even though they have the gender gap in pay, but in the majors, they both earn the same thing. But I think, Mike, you hit it in the nail there when you said, when they compare it in tennis, men and women are playing in the same place at the same time in the majors. So they have the same exposure. It's not like the women right now who are doing their own. If you see in tennis when they're playing different tournaments, the WTA has their own tour, and the Professional Tennis Association of the tour of the male have their own tour as well. So they only coincide in the majors. I mean, this is not an easy thing to go through. Unfortunately, and believe me, we have defended the women here, and we follow the LPGA, and we've always stated what a great talent they have, what a great tour. It's really a world tour what they're doing. But where changes can be made to narrow this gap in pay, the answer isn't easy. Change has to come from fans and viewers, who are the customers in this instance. We all know it can be to influence customers. After all, if you have the ability to direct customers' actions, you potentially have the power to make a lot of money. Maybe the best way of attempting to do this would be putting the media's spotlight on the sport with an emphasis on the characters and the stories that come along with the ladies' tour. It has certainly worked for countless other sports. I mean, many documentaries have been made in the last few years that shine a spotlight on aspects of a sport or pro athlete's lives that many viewers wouldn't know existed if they weren't shown, which then creates more interest in the players' careers. And this is just me throwing something out. I know that Michael Wan has something more under his sleeve. And like you said, Fred, I believe, yes, this was another very concerted, very thought approach that was going to be between their top sponsors, Stacy and Mike, because this is not the first time it happened. Stacy did the same thing when the Olympics were in 2016, and she brought this up. Of course, that is the world stage to bring it up. So they're bringing it up again when the Davos Economic World Forum is there. So I'm not sure it's a really difficult subject to bring to that this gap, to bridge it. But Fred, like you said, it starts with bringing some attention to it, and maybe if they get that exposure, they can start working on bridging that gap, because they certainly have the ability and the game to show that they can. It's not about competing with the men or beating them, but really showing that they do have the skills to put on a good show.
Yeah, it's all about the product and then getting the eyeballs to see it. And Carlos, we're all huge Michael Wan fans and LPGA fans for sure. And you know, we agree that he has done some brilliant things since he has become commissioner of the LPGA Tour, and that he is by far the best executive, sports league executive in the nation. But I think this may have been one of his most brilliant moves yet. He's firing the big guns. He's got KPMG and Stacy Lewis to get network television's attention and get this out there. I would not be surprised to see a few events on network television on the weekends yet this season. The other part of that is then you have to kind of be careful what you wish for. If they get CBS and NBC to give them the time on Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, the LPGA has to produce a quality product to make this whole thing work.
Mike, any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that Fred's comment is a worthy one. And, you know, I think the quality of the product is great. I've been to the end of the year tournament down in Naples for the LPGA, and these ladies can play golf. They can chip, they can putt, they can drive, they can hit all these escape shots. But if they get on network TV, you know, I think they'll deliver a great product golf wise. But the number of viewers is the key to the success going forward. So it would be great to have a drama filled final nine holes between Lydia Ko and Stacy Lewis and, you know, any other player, and the men's game doesn't draw that big of numbers, but it's the quality of the numbers and the demographic that you're drawing. It's an upper scale, usually white male that has the power to make decisions in the marketplace, and you know, the numbers year week in and week out are not huge, but obviously big enough to warrant being on TV most weekends. And people have become conditioned to watching men's golf, and the LPGA just needs to change itself and make itself more watchable, more fun. Because I tell you, these ladies can play. If you watch them in person, you walk away impressed. I have been every time I've watched them.
And that's something that we have been, ever since we started the show, we have been also promoting is the LPGA, because they do have that ability. And I keep insisting, I know this has worked, because it's my experience in other sports and watching is, you know, make the athletes really relatable. Make those stories out there. The people will come and watch. In the end, it really is the athletes and the LPGA's duty to boost their popularity in order to create that kind of revenue that is going to be necessary in order to close the pay gap. I mean, the sport deserves to play. And it's time for the LPGA and its athletes, and they're doing it, to put in the appropriate work that is necessary in order to gain the following required for a big jump in winnings and salary. Michael Jordan, Ronda Rousey, Tiger Woods and the Williams sisters, all of them, all made people want to tune in to watch their sports because we knew something was exciting, was about to happen when they were playing. Women's golf needs this type of athletes in order to reach the next level that we all know it's capable of. It's only a matter of time that the sport will get this, and only then will the pay for its athletes be at the level that can be compared to their male counterparts. Fred, any final words before we close the segment?
No, that's a really good point. And, you know, we might have that. I mean, Lexi Thompson, she was so close last year to having an outstanding year and reaching that potential. I think she still got it. You know, if she could get on a tear and win a bunch of times, win a couple majors, I think the interest in women's golf would skyrocket immensely. You know, the Tiger Woods effect, or, you know, have something Michael Jordan effect, have somebody like that that raises the awareness and crosses the spectrum of sports fan, not just hardcore golf fans. So, yeah, I think that's a really good point, Carlos, right there.
Mike, any final words before we close?
You know, the LPGA might want to consider having players interviewed, be shooting shots, walking down the fairways. Give us a glimpse of the game. Give us a glimpse of what's going through the minds of the players. I know that's not really what you do in golf. You don't interrupt their strategic mind flow. But if there's a way that we can present just a different element of the LPGA, and, you know, just as a player, say Lydia Ko is playing against Charlie Hall and Lexi Thompson and Stacey Lewis, they're all going down the stretch. You know, what is Stacey thinking as Lydia Ko is trying to line up a 15-foot bunker shot or trying to chip and run through a gap to get on the green, up and down? I mean, that would be neat to have sort of that live commentary and feedback through a on-course interviewer, so that the fans feels if I'm right there and I'm speaking I'm hearing what's going through the mind of Stacey Lewis, because we don't know what's going through the mind of Phil Mickelson or Tiger Woods or Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka, because we give them their space, because that's what we do in sports and golf. But maybe the LPGA needs to let us into their lives and into their minds and into their thought pattern, so we really feel as if we've got a front court 50-yard line seat and we're right there next to the leaders coming down the stretch. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, to that point, I think maybe that, like the NFL does, we should put like a mic on the players, the mic top. Let's hear them talk to their caddies and those thought processes going down the fairways and making their shots. So that's it. That's our practice range for this week. We hope we get you a very different take on it. We got four people here, Steve Ewings, Fred Alvader, Mike May, and me, telling you what we think. Kamish, we know you're here. There are some ideas for you, and we know that you're going to do the right job there. You're doing an excellent job. We support you, and we hope that this really becomes the turning point for the LPGA to become really recognized for what the true product that we offer. With that, we'll close the practice range. And now, thank you, Mike, for being with us, and always great to have you. Great insight. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now let's move on to the final pods, where every week we give our short takes on a couple of news. And let's start talking about Xander Schauffele. I mean, having been named PGA Tour Rookie of the Year last season thanks to a pair of victories, including the Tour Championship, it would be understandable if he made a few upgrades in his life. Hey, he did buy a new condo in San Diego where he lives. But it show in a new car. When he went there, he's sticking with the Toyota Camry. He's been driving for a while. It's a little scuffed up. And why, Xander? I ask you, but then he says, you know, the lease is up yet. So I figure out golf teaches you to be patient. So we'll sit that lease out. It worked last year, right? Fair enough, Xander. Fair enough. Drive it until it goes down, and then just buy some real car. Anyway, players and swing coaches have their own preferences when it comes down to how deep they want to drive into their swing analysis. So for some players, The more information, the better. For others, a little can go a long way. Last week, we talked about John Ram and him seeing what Phil Mickelson and his brother, Tim Mickelson, did, going just about inches, degrees, loft, and all this details about how to hit the ball and when. For John Ram, two things only matter: how far he carries the ball and his attack angle with his driver. That is all he cares about. He does have a TrackMan, and he does practice with it, and he uses it just for carry distance, mainly the 7-iron to practice those yardages. The only club that he tries to fix if he's not swinging well with the TrackMan is the driver, and the one number he looks at is attack angle. He knows that if the attack angle is a +3 or a +2, he knows he's hitting good. But if it's below that, he knows there's something going on. So there you have it. That's what John Ram has been doing. And, hey, keep doing it, gentlemen. You're about to become world number one this year. I am sure you're going to be there. So, Fred, that's up with my final thoughts.
Yeah, I just got a couple real quick ones here, Carlos. CBS sports announcer Jim Nantz told reporters at the PGA Show last week that his football sidekick, Tony Romo, will be given a sponsor's exemption into a PGA Tour event in the next 2 months. Romo, the former Dallas Cowboys quarterback and current CBS broadcaster, is a pretty fair golfer. He competed in the Western Hampshire last summer where he missed a cut, but his first round was capped with back-to-back triple bogeys, while his second round included a one-shot penalty for slow play. He has also tried to qualify for the U.S. Open several times, but has failed. So Romo will tee it up as a celebrity in the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am here in a couple weeks, so we can see him there. And according to Jim Nantz, we're going to see him in a PGA Tour event. Then for the other thing, Carlos, Rory McIlroy talked with the golf media in Dubai last week and doesn't agree with Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and a slew of other golf pundits that feel the golf ball should be rolled back for professionals. Rory said, "I don't think the ball travels too far, but I can see the argument." Last season, the McIlroy led both the PGA Tour and the European Tour's driving distance stats. He averaged 318.5 in Europe and 317.2 in America. Last week in Singapore, Sergio Garcia averaged over 18 yards longer with his new Callaway Chrome soft ball than he did in 2017. The new ball features graphene, which is described as 200 times stronger than steel, but incredibly flexible. Garcia averaged 301.9 yards on the PGA Tour last year, but the Masters champ reached an average of 320 yards in route to winning the Singapore Open by 5 shots last weekend. So the arguments are mixed about shortening the golf ball among tour professionals, but the guy that will ultimately have the final say, Mike Davis, seems to be convinced the ball needs to change, so it probably will. Carlos, that wraps it up for January 30th, 2018.
Roll it back. Roll it back. Roll it back.
No.
Yes. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our three VIGs, very important guests of the week, Susie Whaley, Steve Eubanks, and Mike May. Thank you, all three. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember, on TV, Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. The number 9 is in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
This is New York firefighter Rafael Porriette for Firehouse Subs. Every day, a part of every sub you buy at Firehouse Subs helps provide life-saving equipment for first responders. And now, for a limited time, they're introducing the Daily Sub Special. Every day, get a medium sub of the day for just $5.55. They kick it off with Meatball Monday and finish it off with Italian Sunday, with something delicious every day in between for just $5.55. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives. Tap the banner now to learn more. This is New York firefighter Raphael Porriette for Firehouse Subs. Every day, a part of every sub you buy at Firehouse Subs helps provide life-saving equipment for first responders. And now, for a limited time, they're introducing the Daily Sub Special. Every day, get a medium sub of the day for just $5.55. They kick it off with Meatball Monday and finish it off with Italian Sunday, with something delicious every day in between for just $5.55. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Tap the banner now to learn more.